CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Happy birthday, Behind the Black. 13 years of Behind the Black's analysis of the rise of commercial space. But at the same time, Behind the Black covers big space, and one of the biggest space outfits of the 20th century, not NASA, not Roscosmos, is the European Space Agency and their booster from South America, Ariana series. And now, Bob Zimmerman is here. Your subscriptions and donations are most welcome. Ariana 6 is practicing its launch systems, and the word on the test is progressing well. Bob, what is Ariana 6? What place does it serve for ESA and for space? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. First, we're now in the fourth week of my July fundraiser, and once again, your listeners have been extremely generous to supporting my work on Behind the Black, and I really appreciate it, and I have to thank them. I've got a little over a week to go before this ends, and any help that can be support would be gratefully appreciated. Now, on to the story. Ariana 6. What is Ariana 6? Ariana 6 is the new rocket that the European Space Agency proposed back in around 2015 to replace the Ariana 5. It was supposed to be cheaper and better built and owned by the contractor, which was a partnership of Airbus and Safran called Ariana Group. They were going to own it, which means they could then make profits on it elsewhere. But the ESA designed it, and so in 2015 they said reusability is a bad idea. And being a government, still a government-run project, it went really slow and long. And so the original idea was that they would still be launching Ariana 5, and there'd be an overlap as Ariana 6 began launching. Well, they launched the last Ariana 5 rocket about a month ago. They have no more Ariana 5s, and the Ariana 6 is still about, I'd say a minimum of 6 months away from its first launch, minimum. And so what they're doing now is they're doing what they call launch system tests. And this is, they have an engineering model of the Ariana 6 on the launch pad that they can connect fuel lines to and fill tanks and simulate a full launch sequence. And so they've been doing tests of that, and they're saying it's going well. However, it's basically a dress rehearsal countdown. It was supposed to end with a short ignition of the Vulcan rocket that's on the first stage, but they didn't do the short ignition, the burst. They postponed it because, quote, time ran out, which I find amusing. I can't imagine SpaceX not doing it simply because time ran out. But that's the case, and they're going to do more launch tests later this summer. There's a certain leisureliness in them, once again, in the way they're operating, even though they don't have a rocket right now because Ariana 5 is retired and Ariana 6 isn't flying yet. But nonetheless, they seem to be progressing well, and hopefully we'll have Ariana 6 operational very soon.
Non-recoverable, right, Bobby? Cannot be.
That's raised. Right. It's not competitive with SpaceX or maybe any of the other companies that are developing rockets right now because it was built not recoverable, not reusable. The people in charge at ESA poo-pooed the idea in 2015 that reusability would be profitable, and so they just simply didn't do it. And so now they have a rocket that really doesn't compete, and it's had trouble getting contracts. It has contracts, but it's had trouble getting contracts. And it'll manage for a few years, but Europe is already looking at ways to replace it with a reusable rocket already.
Big space. NASA awarding development contracts to a number of companies, some of them startups I've never heard of, Varda and Zeno. Maybe I've heard of one of them. Some of them big companies, including Blue Origin. What kind of contracts, Bob? What do they want?
It's a whole variety of different things. It's 11 different companies, and they range from ULA and Lockheed Martin getting very small contracts to, as you mentioned, Varda and Zeno. These are very small startups. Blue Origin got the most money, $34 million. Most of the contracts are small. They range from $1.6 to $34 million, and they're mainly development contracts. These are to help these companies develop technology that they've already been working on. I do find it ironic that the one who got the most money, Blue Origin, is the one that's got probably the deepest pockets. It's gotten the most money, investment capital from its owner, Jeff Bezos, than anybody, far exceeding most of these other companies. But nonetheless, these are a variety of different projects. Some have to do with developing power sources on the moon. Some have to do with providing tethered solar panels that could provide power to rovers. That's Astrobiotics' proposal. Others have to do with using the regolith, the soil of the moon, to create pavement for roads and foundations for buildings. It's all different ideas along these lines. Some have to do with not more lunar missions, but elsewhere. But that's the idea, and it's a good thing. But the good thing about it is NASA's not building any of it. They're hiring small companies to develop technology that they will then have to sell to others as well as NASA.
I like the one that's written up, Bob. Cube Rover, all one, capital R. Unreal, more than a half a mile, high voltage power line that could be used to transfer power from a production system, that would be the space, the launch system, to a habitat or work area on the moon. So they're beginning to, like architects, they're beginning to sketch out what a moon colony or a moon base would look like.
Yeah, the needs of the base. I mean, that's an Astrobiotics idea, and what they're trying to – they have had this idea of solar panels on rovers. So the solar panel can move around, and it would have electric line that would then plug into either to another rover. It would plug into another rover, or it would maybe move to a site where a habitat is, and you decide to build a habitat in a different place. You could roll your rovers to it, and that's the idea.
We go from the very good small contract, good for a private space, to a story that is too odd to summarize. But a JPL employee has now confessed to using COVID money. How, Bob?
Fraudulently, to grow pot. This guy, Armin Hovhannisian, I think that's how it's pronounced. He works, still works, that's another present tense. He works as a cost control and budget planning resource analyst at JPL. And it appears that what he did is he applied for three different loans from the COVID loan program that was designed to help companies that were suffering during the Wuhan panic over COVID. And he applied for those loans. He lied in applying for those loans about what his business revenue was. And then he didn't use the money as the loan as it was intended. He used it instead to cultivate marijuana illegally. And so he's now been caught and he's now been sentenced. What struck me about this is his job, once again, it's still in present tense, his job at JPL, which has to do with cost control and budget managing. Remember, the Mars sample and return mission is threatened because it's now almost doubled in budget. And JPL's had a lot of problems recently, both in terms of management as well as budget. And maybe this is the quality of employees they're now getting at JPL, and it might explain some of the problems there.
A bean counter growing pot. Okay. We go to SpaceX, where they do not spend a lot of money without getting results. And right now, SpaceX is considering Starship for another occupation rather than going to the moon or Mars. What are they thinking, Bob?
They're thinking about reconfiguring Starship as an orbital space station. There was a series of NASA unfunded agreements with seven different companies. It's different than the previous contracts, which actually had money. These were unfunded agreements whereby NASA provides technical help to the companies as part of the agreement. And NASA was, of those seven companies, SpaceX is the only one that's really got real construction going on and has to do with Starship. And they're going to ask NASA for some technical advice for developing Starship into an orbital space station. The possibilities there are quite stupendous because they could launch very quickly a very large mass object that could very easily become a major space station with relatively little, no assembly required, and that's significant, John.
And the launch system that makes that possible is Super Heavy. And we note that according to the videos that I've watched, Super Heavy is now on the new launch pad at Boca Chica. What new launch pad, Bob? What did they do?
They redid the launch pad. Remember, the first test in April that destroyed the launch pad that was there. It was an interim launch pad. It wasn't intended to be the final pad, but it was more badly destroyed than expected. So SpaceX has very quickly cleaned it up, rebuilt it, put in a water system so that it won't get destroyed during the next launch, and that's finished. And so they moved the Starship on top. getting ready for static fire tests and launch countdown rehearsals. I've said it before. They said they're going to be ready to do a next orbital test launch in August. I believe they will be ready, but they won't do it, I don't think, because the FAA and the Biden administration is going to block them with regulatory entrenchment.
Meanwhile, they're making money. SpaceX and other 22 Starlink satellites. Bob, are we the only people that cover this because it's so routine? It's sort of like somebody stopped for gasoline.
Yeah, I think I'm not the only one that does this, but I do this very regularly, and I cover every launch that occurs to keep track of who's doing the most and where. What's significant about this particular SpaceX launch, yes, very routine. They had to scrub it twice because of weather concerns, but that's not their fault. What makes this significant to me is this was the 49th launch for SpaceX in 23. That's in a little more than half the year they've completed 49 launches. Their goal is 100 for the year, so they have a chance of making that 100 launches. But 49 launches in a year exceeds the launch count annually for the entire United States from 1968 to 2021. In other words, for almost the entire space age, the entire United States, all of its companies and government rockets could not match what SpaceX is doing right now this year. And the year is just a little over, half over. So that just gives you some context of what SpaceX is accomplishing.
And Bob, remembering history of launching into space, because you've written several books on this, did they, in the early days, the 1950s and 60s, when they were putting together the Mercury program, did they talk about making money in orbit or beyond?
That is the tragedy. The federal government moved in and literally made it difficult for private companies to make money as rocket companies. First, they shut down AT&T's attempt to build the first communications constellation, Telstar. They would have done it in the early 60s if Congress and Kennedy had not moved in to block that. And then later, they blocked the launch industry, the federal government, by insisting everybody launch on the space shuttle. So essentially, our federal government destroyed what could have happened in the 1960s private enterprise. And it only was in the aughts and the teens of this century that they finally started to transition to private enterprise again, which is how it should be done. And it's the American model. Why we forgot the American model after winning the Cold War always baffles me, John.
Because SpaceX's launch schedule is attuned to making money. What is Skyroot? Yes. What is Skyroot?
Skyroot is an Indian company attuned to making money, John. It is India is in the process of trying to do the same thing that NASA did in the last decade, transition from being the builder and owner of rockets and spacecraft to being the customer from private enterprise. And this is the Modi government's idea. They want to do what NASA did. And so they told India's space agency that it had to make its facilities accessible to private companies for testing and construction. And so Skyroot is a private rocket startup in India that is planning to launch its first orbital rocket, Vikram, hopefully before sometime this year or next year. And they've already done a suborbital test launch successfully. Well, they got the rights from ISRO, the agency, to use its static fire test stands to test one of their engines. And so they completed a 10-second static fire test of a new engine using ISRO's test facility. And what's significant, once again, is the move in India to private companies competing and achieving this kind of stuff instead of the government doing the job.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. It is happy anniversary. Behind the Black, 13 years of watching commercial space make money and big space not make money. When we come back, more commercial space, mission to Venus. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.